This Two Lectures episode features street poet youth from South Los Angeles, Fabio Lovos, recorded live at the global event in Cardigan, West Wales in 2016.
So I have no PowerPoint ready for y'all, so excuse me for that, but what I do have is this. I have been welcomed to a strange place where my ancestors lay in spirits of my elders. An invitation to those who aren't here but live within us to ignite the acknowledgement of what life is when we don't forget about our people. With different stories collaborating, making unplanned ceremonies turn to develop action just like a mentor, guiding an unplanned misfortune to their community when divine intervention doesn't show up. Proclaiming various intentions for the natural world to create a loving place away from the day-to-day combat with life respiration. But it is hard when you are left over of an interracial assault. Man, I don't know who I am. I just know I'm a mutt. Lost in this world, taken advantage of like a sewing machine, working long shifts, huffing and puffing. Huffing and puffing like a sewing machine's working long shifts, wanting to give up. But the spirits of my fallen won't let me do that. Because I'm just Fabio, a young soul of this land. A survivor of the aftermath is where I stand. No, I won't give up. No, I won't put up my hands. My skin is brown, your soul is still a part of this land. But there will be no human to border block my ancestors' trail of tears from getting to the bullet wound that these conquerors have embodied in me. To keep my spirit anchored with sorrows, but they always find a way to heal me. You see, these are my ancestors. They have those traits. They have those natural currents that come and take me away with the ocean breeze so I can know that I'm always free. So when the night hits and I know that I'm gonna be sailing on the seas, all seven of them. Because my ancestors walk all across, because I am indeed a human like yourself. Thank you. So my name is Fabio Lovos. I come from, both of my parents are Salvadorian. I am the first generation American. And being a first-generation American, it's very troubling in South Los Angeles, where I live at. We go through many hardships, many struggles, many obstacles that we face, and all that has came into my life at an early age. At the age of 10, as I was leaving my fifth grade year, my dad was He was very into drugs and stuff like that. So he was always drinking alcohol every day, always doing some type of cocaine, some methamphetamine, getting them from down the block and stuff. And then that would always interfere with my livelihood, you know. And basically, it was always caused ruckus in the house with my mom. And it got to a point where it got serious. I went to El Salvador one time with my family. And I was over there, and my dad was drinking. And my brother wasn't trying to let him come out the car. I was trying to let him go in the car because he thought he was going to do something bad. And I was walking with all my family down the road. And out of nowhere, my dad comes. My brother lets my dad go in the car. My dad gets inside the car. He turns it on. And as we were walking down the street, we were trying to go to a local town to go buy some burgers. I know right here is my dad's truck just come fast. I turn around and boom, we all just get hit. Like he hits us all. Like if he was a bowling ball and trying to hit the pins, you know, just boom, he just hits us all. And he broke my collarbone. I had 7 broken ribs. The corner of the truck hit me and it broke my collarbone, and then it threw me to a tree, then the tire ran over me and everything. And everybody else got ran over too. And my uncles came, they tried to help us out, and they took me to a hospital. I was throwing up blood. It got to a point where they were saying I wasn't gonna make it. I couldn't breathe. I just kept on just wheezing. I couldn't breathe. I was throwing up blood from my nose, from my mouth. I couldn't walk. The rest of my family were moderately okay, but I wasn't well. Then 3 years after that, we were still with my father. I don't know how, we were still with him. And then he still had those problems, those drug abuse problems, the domestic violence problems. And one day I was getting home from school and I see my dad. My dad's a construction worker. My dad's very talented. You know, he builds houses from the bottom to the top. He's driven planes. He's worked for airlines. He's a construction worker. Man, he's very talented. So he was coming home from work one day, and my auntie's house lives like 3 blocks away from my house, and I get a call from my auntie telling me that my dad just stabbed my mom about 3 times in the stomach, and that my mom is dying. And I'm like, oh, man, I gotta go. So I went with my cousins, we went to go check up on my mom, and then my dad, I seen the truck just leaving because he had another truck, and my mom was just there, like just, you know, just holding herself because he stabbed her in the stomach. And I was like, man, I forgave this guy so many times. And it's like, what can I do, you know? What can I do to try to change his attitude? And I was just bursting out into tears. But basically, that's when my life changed. After that happened, I got into social services, which basically when they take me away from my family and stuff. And I went through a lot of turmoil. I went from family to family to family to family. They took me away from my mom because the court said that my mom couldn't take care of me because she knew that my dad had drug problems and all this. So I was a fifth grader going into sixth grade. I didn't know what was going on. I'm like, man, I can't do this. So throughout my middle school year, from sixth grade to eighth grade, I started messing up. I got into crews in seventh grade. I got into one crew that was like crazy, man, in school. Like, we would hop out of school, we would go do drugs, we would go mug people, we would go do all these type of things. And it got to a point where I was in eighth grade and I kind of like dropped out of middle school. I stopped going to school. I was like, man, screw school, man. I ain't gonna go, man. Like, I wanna hang out with my friends. I wanna be at the park. I wanna be smoking. I wanna be doing all of this drinking and all that type of stuff. And I was just a young kid, you know, I didn't know what I was doing. But it got to a point where I kept on doing this so much, and I kept on seeing my mom struggle at home. After that, after my sixth grade year, I was able to live with my mom from my seventh to eighth grade and so on until now, you know? But I kept on thinking, like, man, my mom's at home working. My mom's working. Right now she's at home resting. My brother's working. My sister's working. And I'm over here out in the streets doing drugs, robbing schools, mugging people, tagging on walls and all this. I'm like, I can't do this, man. I'm like, I can't do this. You know, I would be high and I'm like, why do us teenagers, why do me and my friends, why do we like to be in this state of mind of being high? Why do we like to be drunk? And I kept on questioning myself. It was about 10 of us, but it was many of us more, you know? Like, it was about from a block range to 7 blocks down, 2 blocks wide, it was about 30 of us, like 30 of us teenagers, you know, like different houses and stuff. And we all knew each other. And the funny part is that we were all the same. We all hung out with each other because of this certain type of drug and because of this certain type of alcohol, because of this certain type of lifestyle that we like to live, you know? This, we're gonna live fast and die young, you know? And I was like, I can't do that, you know? I looked at my nuclear friends, the 10 of us, and I was like, I can't keep on doing this. So there was a couple of times, a couple of weeks, where we'll have writing sessions. It'll be kind of funny, but we'll be kicking back at a church that we would, you know, ironically, we would rob the church and stuff sometimes, you know? And we would just hang out there, you know? And then we would have writing sessions. Some people would have skating sessions, rapping sessions. It would just be so crazy, you know? So we would sit down, we'll type on our phones or write, then we'll talk mess to each other, just hip-hop and everything. And it got to a point where it got too dangerous. Like, some of us started talking mess to each other so much that some of us got into a fight. I was about to get into a fight, but I was like, nah, man, I can't keep on doing this. So afterwards, I didn't graduate from middle school. I left middle school with like a 0 point something GPA compared to like the rest of everybody else left with like a 3 point something, a 2 point. Man, I couldn't even get that high, man. I couldn't even get a one, you know? And so I get into high school. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, I just left that crew. I left that type of lifestyle. I'm like, I gotta do it all for me now. Evidence is a rapper from Los Angeles, and he once said in one of his songs, "We're in a sinking boat, but only one can survive." So I looked at the sinking boat around my friends, and I was like, all right, man, we're sinking. And I was like, I gotta get out of here. I gotta get out of here so I can come back. I gotta go succeed. Gotta do whatever I gotta do. I gotta go make my money. Gotta help y'all out. Gotta make a type of organization. I gotta come back and I gotta help y'all, you know? And so I left them, you know? And right as I got into ninth grade, I started writing. I started doing so much writing that the school noticed how good I was in writing. I got into two national essay competitions and I won both of them. I started doing poetry like showcases, and it was so amazing. I went to a couple campuses. I went to USC and UCLA. I went to go perform in front of a college student as a ninth grader. I was like, oh man, this is so dope. I'm like, I'm so glad I left this lifestyle. I'm like, I'm a journalist, you know, like I am still this person. No matter where I go, no matter how old I get, I'm always going to be this street person. The street, I can leave the street, but the street is never gonna leave me. You know, it molded me to who I am, you know? So I'm just a journalist, you know? Those people are still my friends. They're always gonna be my friends no matter what happens, no matter how things go down. They're always gonna be there for me and I'm always gonna be there for them. Matter of fact, I'd be getting home sometimes and they'd be like, yo, Fabio, what's up? How you doing? How's school? I'm like, it's great, man. I'm like, you need any help with their homework? And they'd be like, yeah, all right, I'll go help them out with their homework. Some of them aren't even in school though. Some of them are my age with babies. Some of them have dropped out. Some of them are trying to get their GED at my age. And it's just crazy, you know, but we still show love for each other, you know? So after ninth grade, I just started doing all of these type of things. And it was just so amazing. It was so amazing how many opportunities opened up when you make the initiation yourself. And this is what I used to tell people a lot. So I used to have this teacher named Mr. Ahrens. As I came into high school, Mr. Ahrens is a white guy. In my community, we usually don't see, we usually see white people as a bad person, you know? Sorry, but, you know, that's how we see it, you know? So I seen this white teacher, and I'm like, man, this fool ain't finna help me out, you know? Like, this fool don't care about me. And then, surprisingly, my name used to be 5-0. My name is Fabio, but I used to write 5 and then O. That used to be like my hip-hop name and my graffiti name and stuff, you know? And then I used to, he gave us a book. He was like, all right, you're gonna have to read this book. It's called Hope in the Unseen. And I'm like, all right, you're gonna have to read this book through our homeroom and stuff like that. And he was like, write your name on the side. I wrote my name on the side. And he was like, 5-0. And he just started laughing. And I'm like, what's funny? He was like, no, I like the name. And then he started writing 5-0 on the board and stuff. And then he will always come up to me out of everybody in the classroom. He will always come up to me and talk to me about the book. How are you feeling about the book? How's the book treating you? How are you treating the book? Are you taking care of it? You know, you have to take care of a book. And it was just so amazing. Like, because the book has to do with a kid growing up in this low income neighborhood and he's going to Ivy League college and stuff. And he was like, what type of relations do you have with the book? How do you feel about it? And that was my first book I ever read. And I read it from front to back like nothing. It was just so amazing. And he helped me out so much. He inspired me, to get out of my comfort zone, to understand that these white folks that we see that are always bad might not always be bad, you know? And like he was just such an amazing character. He was kind of like the inspiration of me wanting to succeed with poetry and all that because of this book, Hope in the Unseen. And it was so funny because throughout every homeroom class, we will always sit down together and we'll spend like 15 minutes even after homeroom talking. I would even go late to some classes and he would just be there speaking to me. How do you feel about this? He'll speak to me about my dad. He'll speak to me about my mom. He would just talk about my life and stuff like that. I'll talk about his life. And it was such a connection, you know? This is why I feel more connected with my adults rather than my teenagers, because I just love speaking to my elders, love speaking to my adults. I just find it such an amazing connection. And it got to the point where at the end of the year, he asked me, he was like, Fabio, and he was like, well, what do you think Hope in the Unseen means? And I was like, Mr. Ahrens, I don't know. I don't know what that means. And he was like, well, you know, your life has faith. And he was like, I think that's what Hope in the Unseen is, faith. And I was like, oh. I was like, yeah, man. I was like, you know what? I think it does mean faith. And ever since then, that has always stuck. That has always stuck with me. Along with that, you know, a sinking boat and only one was surviving. You know, so I had that. I have the faith. I have the opportunity to come out of this turmoil and to try to make something out of it. So after my ninth grade year, I started getting more involved. I started getting involved with a club called Sanaa, which is social action, networking, and all this. And it started telling me about how our schools don't have ethnic studies, don't focus on art studies, and just about the rights that students have, and just started bringing me social awareness and so much things that I started to become an activist. I started to form our poetry all around these social problems that we had in our community, and it was just so amazing for me to form this around it. That they really helped me out with everything that I was going through with my social awakening. I was like, oh, why is our school like this? I'm like, well, I started questioning so many things, like why is the government giving more money to these prisons, to the local prisons around my neighborhood, rather than giving it to the schools, you know, like why are we wasting so much money on this rather than this? And it was just so many questions that I had, you know, just because of the Sanaa group, that later on I started finding myself with street poets. And once I found myself with street poets, it was such an amazing awakening with them as well. We did a retreat in 2014, and it was a men's retreat. I don't have my dad. My dad is in prison. He still has like about 11 more years in prison before he gets out. And since I don't have a dad, this was a men's retreat. So it was a group of us. You know, it was colored minorities. We went up to Big Bear, and we started having these conversations with amongst each other, and it was such amazing time and stuff. That right when I came back down, I learned how to respect my elders. I learned how to follow my to try to find my culture, my traits, and all this. And then I started getting more exposed to my community, how to try to heal it and stuff. And that's when I started getting involved more with street poets. We started doing open mics, and I started going to their Seeking Peace. I started going to their Beats and Rhymes sessions. And it was just such amazing because everybody in the community, so street poets holds this space on Tuesday called Seeking Peace, where everybody in the community is welcome to come. And then we sit down and we'll have a poetry workshop. And we'll just have a meditation session. Then after that, we'll get into poetry. Then everybody will share their poetry. Then we'll talk about it. And then we'll talk about how it feels and how it connects to life and all this. And then everybody just feels so relieved afterwards. And it was just such an amazing experience that I was able to have with them that I had to keep on getting involved with them. And ever since then, I've been getting involved with them. And right now, I'm a youth leader. So I basically represent the youth in our street poets community. And I go out here and I do these poems like you have been witnessing. And I do all this work. And what I've been wanting to do for my future that I have looking forward to, I haven't been able to do yet, is that I'm thinking to make an organization where I have poetry and gardening, because I'm also a local gardener. I'm a farmer back in my community. I'm thinking of creating both of them and putting them together and able to make like this organization where if you have problems with drug abuse, if you have problems with domestic violence, if you have problems with like gang affiliation, any type of problem, if you have like anger issues or whatever it is, you can come to this organization. And if you're a person who's emotional, if you're somebody who likes to write more, whether you're a teenager, whether you're an adult, whether you're an elder, whether you're a little kid, whatever you want, you can always come, and we can always have these poetry workshops. We'll just write poems. We'll do many type of techniques of poems. There's so many ways we can write poems. We can write a community poem right now. We can all read it, and we can have such a beautiful saying towards the end of it. I want to have that type of space for the people who, you know, seem more emotional attached to their writings. Then I also want to have a planting space for them, for people who seem more physically active, because in my community we have violence. And a lot of people just always want to reach for their gun and shoot somebody. They always want to grab a knife and go stab somebody. Always want to beat somebody up. So I want to have like a gardening a gardening experience where you can come, and if you want to beat somebody up, go beat up that soil. Like, go get a shovel, go beat up the soil. Like, man, I hate this, man. Just go ask your neighbor if she wants a garden, if he wants a raised bed or something. Let's go build it, man. And you're going to maintain it, and you're going to get paid for it. And that's going to happen soon. So I want you all to wait for that. So that's going to be coming to Los Angeles sometime. It's going to happen because here at Do Lectures, we learn how to do things. And since I'm 5 years, it's going to happen in Los Angeles. That's all I have for you all today. I'm sorry my speech wasn't that much.
The Do Lectures is here to share stories of remarkable people in the hope they will inspire you to go and do amazing things too. There are over 300 talks to listen to, or if you prefer, watch on our website, thedolectures.com. Hit the subscribe button on your favourite podcast platform to get the latest episodes when they come out.